The Tom Woods Show, episode 1630.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, as you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been spreading some pretty terrible ideas, and she's wrong on just about everything. Well, I've put together the definitive smash of all of it. The Green New Deal, affordable housing so-called, free college, high tax rates. It's in another free ebook, yes, a free ebook, called AOC is Wrong, The Upside-Down World of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Grab your free copy at aociswrong.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I want to tell you about a friend of this program before we get into the topic for today. He's been a guest before, and he's now got a website, finally, of his own, and it's the leader of the Libertarian Party of Canada. That's Tim Moen, who's a great guy. And he's now finally got timmoen.net. That's Tim, M-O-E-N, timmoen.net, where he's got a great blog and a podcast covering all sorts of great libertarian topics, the kinds of things you want to be hearing about. So he has been talking about what the rights and wrongs of the virus and the virus response are and should be. But he's also been doing a series on the virtues. There's plenty of great material, both in podcast and blog form, at timmoen.net. And as I say, he is a tremendous guy. I'm glad to call him a friend, and I definitely want to urge you to check out his site. And I'll link to it at tomwoods.com/1630 as our listener website of the day. And of course, we're all under house arrest right now, most of us. So this is a good time to get that project done. Start that blog, start that website. And if you get your hosting through my link, I'll publicize it for you and get some traffic to you. Also send you some tutorials to help you get started and give you membership in my private bloggers group. There are a lot of great benefits that come from just getting your hosting through my link. You also get a great price when you do that. So it's a win for everyone. Get the details on how to do that at tomwoods.com/publicity. All right, today I am sharing with you an appearance I recently made with Brett Vinat of the School Sucks Project. He has a School Sucks podcast, and he had me on to talk about coronavirus-related topics. And I know we've covered this quite a bit on the show, but this got great feedback, so I thought, what the heck, I think I'll share it. If you're like me, you can't get enough of this stuff, unfortunately. And I know I want to be covering other topics, and I intend to do that. We have been doing that. We will keep doing that. But this is the thing that's on everybody's mind all the time. And I have to respond to that in some way. So just so you know, tomorrow we will have Jeff Deist on the program, who's actually written out a series of bullet points that a smart governor might observe. And this is important because a lot of people say, you libertarians are good at complaining, but where are your ideas? Well, Jeff has really responded to that. So that's going to be a great episode to listen to as well. So make sure you subscribe to the Tom Woods Show, tomwoods.com/apple, so you get all these episodes delivered to you automatically. And here we go, my episode with Brett Vinat.
Tom, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Brett. Always a pleasure.
This is something that I've been doing over the course of the last month, is just having check-ins with people from my life in one way or the other, getting their perceptions and their responses to the situation we've seen unfolding over the last month. And I was very interested in your perspective. I've been seeing a lot of what you've been doing on your podcast. I've been seeing a lot of what you've been posting and a lot of the engagement you've been getting on Facebook. So I just wanted to talk today about where you're at with this whole situation. You know, I've been trying to keep these positive and constructive. But at this point, and one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you about this, I'm almost feeling like that part of it has like settled in, whatever the nervousness is. I'm feeling very stabilized about this, and I'm starting to become, maybe I'm just going through like the five stages of grief here, but I'm starting to become more agitated with some of the things that I'm seeing. And I think you might be experiencing similar feelings.
Oh, geez, it's unbelievable. I've been on a roller coaster with this thing because I was in New York as recently as March 8th,
yep,
2020. That's how quickly things change. And I had lunch with Gene Epstein, who runs a wonderful debate series, the Soho Forum. And just to show how quickly things can change, I was telling him about some trips I had coming up that I was concerned might be affected by the virus. And we both were of the opinion, now Gene's 75, so he's very much in a vulnerable position, at least compared to other people. And we did not shake hands. He has a Japanese wife, so we did a bow instead of a handshake, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But it's so interesting that we both felt like this was a matter of me deciding what level of risk I wanted to take on. Was I willing to go on the trips? And I just felt like I want to live my life. You know, I mean, this is, and so we actually thought this would be a matter of me deciding whether or not I wanted to go. And it turned out, nope, that is taken out of our hands completely. So I then tried to read everything I could. And I was reading all these wild predictions of what might happen. And it's not to say that those predictions couldn't have come true or might not yet come true. I mean, nobody really knows. A lot of people are blowing smoke, even the modelers, maybe especially the modelers. But for a while, I thought, boy, libertarians are being very flippant about this thing. And I think some of them still were, and maybe some of them still are. But yeah. Then I just watched the coverage of this thing. And doggone it, did this start to irritate me. Like, there would be no interest in following up on why this country is doing better than that one. And they'd say, well, because this one did social distancing. Okay, but see, this one that's doing pretty well didn't really do social distancing. Yeah, but they closed such and such. Yeah, this other one did too, and this one only closed this one thing. And like, there's just no real curiosity about it. And anytime you'd say, well, this country seems to be having some success, it would be like they were angry at you for pointing it out. It was weird. Or you'd find some good news about, well, gee, actually, then in this way, we can see that the numbers seem to be trending down. They'd be angry at you for finding good news. So the other day, there was an article, ABCnews.com had a piece on the head, Robert Redfield, the head of the CDC, saying that the coronavirus death total in the U.S. will be, quote, much, much, much lower than anticipated. He used the word much three times. Now, mm-hmm. You'd think, okay, well, that's got to be newsworthy, right? I mean, even ABC reported that. So I go over to the Drudge Report, which is entirely hysteria all the time now. It's all the only stories they're going to run are hysteria. There's no mention of this. It's the head of the CDC. Nothing. No link to it whatsoever. So this got me irritated. Then the other day, I mean, it's not just that they're taking photos from Italy and passing them off as New York, or that the numbers are way, way lower than they said. But then the other day, there's this story that CBS News ran with. Oh, we've got video of this crying nurse because she doesn't have a mask. And it turns out this crying nurse is mentally ill, hasn't worked at that hospital for a year, and the whole story is a fraud. I mean, at this point, can I say a bad word on your show? Is that
allowed? Please, yes. People would love to hear that.
At this point, who the hell can keep up with all the bullshit?
Oh, okay. It's not hell.
Yeah, you thought, okay. Half of them are going to say, oh, for Woods, that's the word.
Right.
But you see what I mean? Like, after all, like, I was a guy who was willing to go halfway with these people and say, you know, you're right. We got to really have reasonable precautions. I still believe that. But the way they've covered it, and then when you try to say, you know, maybe this thing works in more complicated ways than we think, you know, maybe there's some underlying issue in Iran or Italy or whatever that might account for the severity there. You know, you would either get anger that you're not just repeating what you've been told, or what I find is I'll post something about this virus and here's what I'll get. Well, Tom, you see, what we need to do is something called flatten the curve. Our concern is that if the case numbers spike too soon, you know, all at once, our healthcare facilities won't be equipped to handle them. So what we call this flattening the curve, it extends the deaths outward, doesn't necessarily reduce them, but at any one time, the healthcare system is able to handle it. Now, Brett, you've heard this probably 100,000 times already. I've heard this 100,000 times. Somebody actually thinks that's an answer to something I've written. They're just going to repeat what they heard on ABC News like I haven't heard that. So it's like everybody's treating me like I'm seven. It's making me crazy.
So you certainly noticed that all of the energy and outrage that was directed into like issues in identity politics, people have channeled now into these kinds of stay at home, like shaming people for being outside, shaming people for not having the equal level of commitment to flattening the curve. I mean, I've even noticed that I'm susceptible to this a little bit and I'm working on it, but like I mentioned the five stages of grief, just kind of like tongue in cheek. And I think there is going to be a process of going through that for a lot of people. Like everybody started in denial. I was there 6 weeks ago for sure. My webmaster was telling me about this in January. I said, okay, I'll go on Amazon.com and order a couple boxes of sardines and some protein powder, the things that I like, just in case you're right. And now I think, you know, the second stage is anger. But when I see people who are still in some level of denial or even what I'm misperceiving as denial about this, I find myself getting angry. I actually got into a huge debate on another show that I do. I think it was on Sunday. And when the other people involved weren't taking it as seriously as I was, now I'll explain what I mean by taking it seriously, because I certainly don't feel hysterical about any of this. And now I'm having a lot of the same questions and frustrations that you've been expressing on your show here and on Facebook. But I felt like I had to dig in on the anger and take this seriously when I felt like what I was saying was countered with some form of denial, even if I wasn't perceiving it correctly. My position on this thing is, you know, referencing the things that you mentioned about all of these curiosities about the disease and in different places, I have a limited amount of time and resource and IQ points to devote to this. So I need to act as if this disease, and without going down rabbit holes of can you catch the flu? Can you catch a virus? How accurate is the testing? Why is it? Is it different in different parts of the world for all these varieties of factors? I just have to act like it's real and it's potentially dangerous and take precaution. And that's out of my control. And the only sort of serenity that I can get is like, okay, I'm doing the things that, you know, protect me. I'm eating right. I'm exercising. I'm controlling my stress. I'm protecting my immune system and I'm, you know, properly sanitizing. That's the end of my sphere of control in this area. So then kind of channel my efforts into the things that I actually can control, like preparedness and planning for what is, I think, going to be a considerably different future. But you've also talked about, you can comment on that, but you've also a week ago, even though it seems like 6 months ago, you were on Part of the Problem with Dave Smith. And you were saying that you were kind of frustrated that there didn't seem to be at that point, and I'm wondering if you've noticed any changes in the past week, there didn't seem to be like a middle ground on this. Either it's a hoax, which is maybe the flippant libertarian response you were referencing, or we need to lock everybody down for good because of this thing. So has that changed at all? Do you still feel that way? And then feel free to comment on anything else I said.
Well, as the projected numbers have come down, I have seen more people willing to say that we could have some kind of gradual reopening. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's that. And the point is, you obviously cannot continue in this condition indefinitely.
Right.
And there's division about what happens when we emerge from house arrest. There's some division about that. Does this mean that the virus has somehow subsided while we've been in our homes, and it's still out there. So if we emerge, does it come back? And then we just go back in our homes. At some point, we're just going to have to decide how can we proceed as a society at this point, other than to say we have to make special precautions for the most vulnerable people.
Right.
And the response you get here, and it's so funny to hear, these are the people who represent science giving you this response. Oh, but it's not just old people. You know, there are young people who die. Yes, that's true. There are. It's trivial. It's completely trivial. Now, it's not to say that people, younger people, haven't had really, really difficult, challenging bouts with this thing. But in terms of deaths, it's a rounding error. But you get this, like, all of a sudden, I'm a scientist, but now it's just anecdotal evidence. Well, look, I have a friend who got it, and he's young, that sort of thing. And the numbers are, like, it's like when you're on Facebook and you say, look, men tend to be taller than women. And somebody says, what? My wife's 6'1". Like, that's an argument.
Right.
It's not like, this is the exact argument that they think the skeptics are making about the virus, about, well, I've got, you know, none of my friends have it, so therefore it's not serious. They're doing the same thing about the young people, because anything that makes them think this might be manageable somehow makes them angry. It's, again, it's like good news makes them angry. Like, they've determined this is going to be bad, and doggone it, that's the universe they're going to live in. The fact is, we have an advantage with this thing, which is we can to some extent, identify who the most high-risk people are. And we make special provision for them, with whether it's meal delivery or whatever, until the thing subsides. But there isn't going to be anything to return to if we're all just sitting in our homes indefinitely. And some of these political leaders are just banding about, yeah, you know, maybe it'll be through the whole summer. Maybe it'll be through the end of 2020. Maybe we'll do this and that. I don't know what you're thinking, but that's crazy. And that has nothing to do with, I just care about my 401k or I just want the stock market to go up. Again, this is why you can't have a discussion with some people. I mean, that is not what we're talking about. It's that the approach they're taking, which is just to flippantly say, well, you know, with our approach, yeah, we're not going to be able to do this. We're not going to be able to do that. You're going to be stuck in your home and we're not going to have any large gatherings indefinitely. Okay, but let's stop and just think about, can we at least realize the magnitude of what's going on here? Because when you just flippantly say, oh, and by the way, you know, no large gatherings for as far as the eye can see. Well, what are large gatherings? Sporting events, concerts, lectures, the arts, crowded museums, like basically all the sorts of things that make life worth living. And we just get people, yeah, you know, well, but hold on a minute. If what you're doing for again, an indefinite amount of time is stripping people of their hopes, dreams, and aspirations, stripping them of the ability to live in any meaningful sense other than merely biological.
Right.
Is this living? And I feel it seems like they're saying, well, but we have to protect certain people. So in other words, they say we're the ones doing these crude cost-benefit calculations. But what that's what they're doing, because they're basically saying, we're going to slice 1 year off everybody's life so that this person at age 75 doesn't die. And so it'll be like everybody loses a year to give that guy a year or something. I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'm being evil to think maybe there's a way we can do both. We can protect vulnerable people and not ruin everybody's, like just take something like this. Think of somebody who's a Broadway actor at this point. Now Broadway, that's tough because New York is in a tough spot. It's true. Mm-hmm. But anybody who's a traveling actor, like for example, in my area, A Bronx Tale, one of my favorite musicals, was going to be coming because they travel all over the country. They were coming to Orlando. So every single person whose life revolves around something as simple as that is upended indefinitely. Maybe they lose that forever. This is what gives their life meaning. It gives their life meaning. Yes, they're physically alive. Yes, they're breathing. They're consuming food. You know, they're doing everything that an elephant does. But at some point, are we really saying it doesn't? Or that anybody who thinks that people's hopes, dreams, and aspirations matter just cares about the stock market? No, we're just saying, let's really be sure we have exhaustively considered the alternatives. It's like the Iraq War. Did they exhaustively consider the alternatives before they rushed into war, before all the newspapers had written their editorials telling us that's the only option, and the politicos said that's the only option? I'm sick and tired of being told that's the only option. They said that to us in 2008. With the financial crisis, the only option is to bail everybody out. And then afterward, we realized, well, at the time, some of us realized that was a mistake. The CEO, one of the CEOs of AIG even said later, probably would have been better to let us just go bankrupt. How about for once we actually discuss alternatives just for 5 minutes?
Right. And when people are so paralyzed by fear, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of, especially once you take the economic implications into account here, that over 6 million people filed for unemployment last week. I might have made a mistake in a recent conversation I had. It might have put me in a box that I shouldn't have been in trying to understand the current situation. But comparing this to 9/11, you and I, we were both old enough. We were in our 20s when that happened. It didn't seem initially, as far as like what the public perception was, that there were any other options to what followed. And when you mentioned the Iraq War, people were still, I mean, the people who had been trying to get into Iraq since the 90s were able to surf on a public fear that still existed, what, like 3.5 years later at that point to do that? So that, I think, is a little bit ominous in this situation where one of the points that I was making and one of the places I dug in my heels in a recent conversation I had is that things are not going back to normal. Don't talk about like things are going to be normal in the summer. And I don't mean to be doom and gloom about it, but I've seen things like, you know, the Imperial College of London put out a study where they're basically saying this thing is going to have a rhythm that lasts maybe 18 months, maybe until the end of 2021, where, you know, there's going to be a spike in ICU admissions. And then they're going to say, okay, everybody back inside. And then it'll be relaxed. And, you know, the New York Times published at least reference to a government virus plan that was about 100 pages long that said the exact same thing. So over the next 18 months, it's possible that the public could be acclimated to this rhythm of inside outside. And what is the psychological impact that that's going to have? So I'm concerned about that. But when I put that idea out there that things are not going back to normal, there's already too much discussion and too much of what I see as a very visible attempt to adjust the public to that idea. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's just it, isn't it? In fact, I like that phrase, adjust the public to the idea.
Oh, it's all about adjusting the public, Tom.
Yeah, yeah.
So much of this.
And things that were unthinkable, you know, 10 minutes ago,
yeah,
become what we're all supposed to think, and deviation is not allowed. And so that's what I was getting at before with the fact that I would post something, and as a response, I would just get a repetition of what we've been told. It reminds me of what Michael Malis and a few others called midwits. These are people with some intelligence, but they're really not that bright. They're just kind of average, but they think of themselves as being pretty bright because they can explain what flattening the curve means.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this conditioning sort of yields us, is a bunch of people who feel like they're really important because they're just repeating what they've been told. Now, sometimes I'm not saying that people in charge never tell you what's right. I'm not saying it's metaphysically impossible they could give you good advice. It is possible. But man, does this play into that kind of mentality of, I'm going to learn by heart what they just told me so that I can go out and repeat it to people and be a good citizen.
Mm-hmm. But everybody probably has a version of that too. I mean, don't you think that a condition where most people are reduced to this kind of fight or flight, fear response to a situation, that bouts of midwittery kind of increase a little bit? Like, I've had my moments with it. Like I said, having an anger response to somebody else's denial, I see that as me not, you know, projecting my best self into the world in this situation. So I think even people who are just, you know, consumers of, especially people who are more just consumers of legacy media, are going to be susceptible to that. But I think everybody is more susceptible to that in a situation. It requires like a higher level of consciousness.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think when I first posted something on Twitter, probably it was March 10th or so, I was looking at an article that was saying, look, folks, just do the math. This is where the numbers are going to be. I posted that on Twitter and I simply said, for those of my friends who were saying this is going to be nothing worse than just an ordinary flu, where do you think these numbers go wrong? And I was not being sarcastic. I mean, what do I know about this? I genuinely want to know. And frankly, what I was looking for, to be honest with you, was reassurance from somebody, from people whose judgment I entrusted. I wanted somebody to say, here's the flaw in those numbers. They're using some extreme outlying possibility, whatever. And I didn't say, you're all a bunch of stupid heads because you won't listen to CNN. It really was, okay, I think CNN actually makes a case that does not sound completely implausible. So I'd just like to know what's going on. And that's the balance we should be striking. And it's interesting that even people who follow me on Twitter, who are presumably sympathetic to me, I've been able to have friendly conversations with people who disagree. But geez, sometimes it's like all the good they think I may have done in the past has been all swept away now. You know, now they can be rude and assume the worst possible motives. Oh, geez, you know, it's...
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean by more people being reduced to like temporary midwits, is that there's suddenly a lot of absolutes. And I caught myself, this was recorded, this was for a show. I listened back to it yesterday. I caught myself, like I said, digging in my heels on one side where a lot of nuance about this was needed. And obviously, it's always missing from online discussions. Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. And I wanted to ask you, because you have a much larger platform of influence than I do, but I'm getting all kinds of weird stuff from people. Like, talk about this, talk about that. Is your email inbox or your messenger inbox filled with weird, maybe conspiratorial things that are like, hey, Tom, you're missing this whole angle of this thing?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm too naive. You know, I need somebody on Twitter or in my email inbox to tell me what the real story is. Let me read you something, though, that you're not going to believe this. I mean, I'm sending it out as we record this. I'm actually sending this to my email list with the person's name removed.
Right.
But when somebody is this, in this case, sometimes it's when people are dumbbells I send out. I use them as an example. This person is just frankly inhuman. And so I used him as an example. What I had written was an invitation to people on my mailing list to join me and Michael Malice and Dave Smith and a couple of other people for a live charity event where we were going to play the hysterical game Quiplash and live stream it. And people in the audience can play along on their smartphones. We're just going to have a nice time because we're all stuck in the house and we're all going stir crazy. And this would be a nice morale boost for everybody. And we were going to simultaneously raise money for City Meals on Wheels, which brings food to homebound elderly people in New York. Okay.
Yep.
Nothing objectionable about that in any way. Everybody loved it. We had a great time. Even people who couldn't come said it was a great idea. They were glad we were doing it. Here's what I got from somebody. Mr. Woods, by the way, that's Dr. Woods. I should have corrected him. He says, seriously, why in the name of common sense would I want to help any of the miscreants occupying that filthy liberal ghetto? I, for one, have seen this scamdemic, in all caps, for what it is from the outset. And I'll be damned if I will endorse or further the actions of those in New York or Seattle or LA or any of the other vile conclaves. There's more, plenty more I could say, but I will just leave it at that. What do you say about somebody like that? That person's so far gone, you'll never get that person back.
Right.
That's inhuman.
Well, okay, so there's all of that, like just, you know, like this Malthusian cleanse the earth of the people who would dare to live in such a place, part of it. But the whole scamdemic thing, I'm seeing a lot of that, and I think it has tied up in it. And this is a place where like some separation of this is necessary in the response. Like we know as libertarians all the things that governments, state, local, national, international, the United Nations have dreamed of doing and dreamed of expanding at least since 9/11. But you can take this all the way back to Woodrow Wilson or before if you want. Right? Like all of these designs for humanity and for the world, we know they're real, at least in the, you know, the design stage. A lot of people have taken this and they push it all into this one problem that gets this public reaction, and then all of the solutions can come through the floodgates at once. I mean, this is the thing that I'm seeing most frequently. And this time, I'm kind of like, yeah, if there ever was a situation for all of these things to happen, again, this is a place where, you know, I'm just trying to be balanced in my approach to understand, not just like, oh, get out of here, you crazy conspiracy theorist. If they ever had a chance at all of these things that, you know, most people who, you know, don't want to dig into conspiracy theorists or don't want to, you know, engage in those kind of conversations are always dismissing, real ID, forced vaccinations, like that's all available with this situation. So I'm actually now just kind of like being more careful about like, I'll take it piece by piece and I'll see what people have to say. But yeah, I'm getting lots of interesting pictures and messages like that in my email box too. And for the first time, I'm saying this is not all crazy. And that's an interesting discomfort that I'm experiencing.
Well, with me, it's more a matter of, I don't think 9/11 was an inside job, but I think as with anything, it gets exploited by people who exploit every situation. And so I think that's what's happening here. And I had somebody on Twitter say, look, Tom, nobody likes the situation. Nobody's enjoying this. They're only doing this because they're desperate and they have to come up with some way to protect the public. Now, that could be true for a lot of people. But doggone it, Brett, I believe there are some people who get their kicks from stuff like this. I do. I don't think they even themselves fully realize that that is a motivator, but I absolutely think there are people who like to be superior to others, appear to have superior knowledge to others, to tell those stupid rubes what to do. I absolutely think there are people who enjoy, I mean, just gratuitously want to make people unhappy. Sorry. I've been on this earth long enough to have known such people.
So you're saying it's time for libertarians and progressives to shine together.
You would think. Yeah, you would think. You would think. But yeah, but meanwhile, they're all saying libertarianism is dead. I don't even want to get into that whole question. But honestly, that's got to be a whole separate thing. I've actually thought, you know, I do all these free ebooks to get people on my mailing list. I really need to do one on this, you know, like the definitive treatment of this subject and how libertarians should think about it or handle it or whatever. But also, I've also thought about doing one on the economics of the virus, because, you know, what does the economy look like when you suddenly and forcibly place these resource constraints on it? You know, you deprive it of labor. You know, you deprive it of some resources. What does that look like? So I, you know, much as I think I need to stop obsessing over this, there's that part of me that frankly doesn't want to talk about anything else. And that, by the way, that's been a balancing act for my podcast. I have a 5-day-a-week podcast, and I have to make a judgment about what am I going to cover on this thing. I could talk about this virus every single day, and there would be people who would eat up every syllable, mm-hmm. as would I. But at the same time, there are people who need some semblance of normal life restored. And right. if all I do is talk about the virus, I'm not giving them that.
Yeah. No, it's something that I'm going to just be A-B testing on my show, just as to see what the response is. Like, yeah. I want to get back to normal content. I posted in my supporter-only group today, I'm doing my final conversation. It's funny that you say this, because I said, I'm doing my final conversation, this Hi, How Are You Doing series about people's response and feelings about COVID-19 with Tom Woods. And then I was just going to say, if you want more news about this, you can go to tomwoods.com and listen to his show. I'm sure he'll be talking about it. And plenty of other people are too. But I get what you're saying. Yeah, you want to find a balance between the two. I want to find that as well. So, but while you have been talking about this on your show, I just want to get your thoughts about this. I know you had Doug Casey on. I know you had a couple of economists on. I know you've been doing a lot of your own thinking about it. Like, as far as the economic forecast, do you think it is total economic collapse that we're looking at? Do you think we're looking at?
No, I don't think that. I mean, but it depends on how long this goes on.
Right.
Because to some extent, you have to bear in mind that it is, although not likely, it is possible at least that the general public, for some reason, could simply have a change in taste, that even without the virus, they could have decided, you know, it's more economical to eat meals at home than at restaurants. And
sure.
I think I'm going out too much. I should stay home and spend more time with my family. If people made those decisions voluntarily, we wouldn't say, hey, go out to a bar. You're ruining the economy, right? We would say, no, the economy has to adapt to people. The people don't exist for the economy. The economy exists for people. So if people made these choices voluntarily, we would adapt. You know, we would just shuffle resources around and we would adapt. So it's not that per se that's the problem. But it's that, first of all, these are not people's voluntarily expressed preferences. And secondly, who knows from one place to another what's considered essential and what isn't? So a flower shop is not considered essential. Okay, but maybe, I don't know, maybe there are depressed people and flowers cheer them up. You know, so that's not essential to help depressed people? Like, you know, when you realize how arbitrary the essential non-essential distinction is, then you realize, you know, how little economic sense this is making. What really would matter is forcibly, you know, again, forcibly closing things for long periods of time with people expecting that they could be reopened at any moment.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. So they don't know. So do I retrain for something else or do I just hold back? And nobody knows what the state is going to do. That's an issue. And then secondly, are people really going to invest for the long term if they feel like, well, next year they might close us down again, or they might close us for a month and then be open for 2 months and then close for a month? I mean, who can function this way?
Absolutely.
So the real problem is the uncertainty extending into the like the unusual. There's always uncertainty, but the unusual amount of uncertainty. See, a comparable situation would be World War II, because during World War II, the general public had to make a lot of sacrifices, like we're making now. There were entire classes of consumer goods that were not available to anybody at any price. And there were other consumer goods that were available, but only in rationed quantity. So people made real sacrifices. But then after the war was over, even though some Keynesian economists predicted that the economy would tank, because what are we going to do with all these people coming back from Europe who have no jobs and we're just going to have a big problem? No, the economy did great. 1946 was a tremendous year for the American economy. But the reason, in large part, for that was that business, which had held back from investing for years and years and years, felt like finally we feel like the federal government is exhausted from war and domestic programs. They're probably going to give us some breathing room just to be normal for a while. That's the difference between then and now. We don't know what these policymakers are going to do. We don't know how many future shutdowns there will be, and that's what concerns me.
So uncertainty breeds fear, and it also breeds a lot of the fear-mongering that also produce, I think, at least a kind of psychological unrest. So that is something that I think needs to be resolved. It reminds me, one of my favorite conversations that I had with you is actually at an event. You probably remember this. Somebody in the audience prompted the two of us into a discussion about moon landing conspiracies. And I said, one of the reasons why this is so rich for this is like nobody understands how it was done. The average person doesn't understand this. So obviously you have all kinds of appeals to ignorance that you can do. And in those vacuums, you can insert whatever kinds of information you want. So right now we're seeing this inundation in like theories about the disease, theories about the economy, theories about the government response, just producing this massive amount of noise. And, you know, people have to like be really, really deliberate about finding a process to find a signal. And through all the noise in each one of those different theaters, but also I think focusing their energy as much as they can into the theaters where they have some control. A lot of people are seeing tons of their energy and attention sucked into places where there's nothing they're going to be able to do instead of like, you know, personal care and preparation. Like those are two places where we definitely all have control. So, I mean, your point is that uncertainty about like what is going to happen over the next 18 months needs to be resolved, or not only will we see people continue to become more unwell psychologically, but they're also going to be poisoned with, you know, all of the things that fill this space of uncertainty. And I think that's, you know, potentially a danger.
Yeah, I think so too. But yet the longer this goes on, you're right, the more it and also, I think what would be interesting to observe, depending on how long it goes on, is how many of our patriots today who boast of their patriotism because they are delighted to stay home and look at all the advantages of staying home. I'm spending more time with my kids. I'm growing stuff in my garden. Look, nobody disputes that. Those are all good things. But if I went over to your house and I put bars around it and I said to you, I want you to count your blessings because you have a really nice house, you wouldn't do that. So I get that you say, I got to make lemonade out of lemons. And I've done the same thing. I'm working on a project while I'm stuck here. I get that. But I wonder a month in, 2 months in, and then being told we got to extend it. At what point do even the opinion molders who feel like they have to be the virtue signalers, at what point does one of them venture out and say, maybe we got to try something different? When do they break ranks is going to be interesting to see.
I think that relates to a post you made and a point you made in the show. You made the post 3 days ago on Facebook, and it was kind of like the thing that I wanted people to walk away. It was one of the reasons why I wanted to have this conversation with you. You know, you start out the post by saying you're all for taking reasonable precautions, right? Like I said, about like, there's a lot of unknowns here, so I'm just going to act as if and do what I need to protect myself. But then this question about life. That is mere biological life worth living? Is that something that you should count blessings for when everything that really makes life worth living is stripped away? And one thing that I would like, you know, people in your audience, people in my audience to do is confront people with this idea when they encounter that level of fear about this. You know, like, is life just drawing breath and having a pulse? Or is it about, you know, actually, as you said, having a soul? And how do we get back to that? And that's really important. And people shouldn't take this shortcut, like flatten the curve as a stock response to anybody who's asking questions about this thing. Because I think the time, like, we've adjusted in our own personal ways to this situation. We've done what we need to do to prepare. And now I think it's time for people to start asking questions. Not just about what they're seeing on television, but also what the long-term response is going to be and what it means for the public. It's time to start questioning various aspects of this. So I appreciate you doing that, and I appreciate you making that point on the show and sharing everything else that you did.
Well, thank you. And especially because we sometimes hear this time frame of 18 months because they think maybe there'll be a vaccine in 18 months. Now, most people are not saying you're going to be locked in your home for 18 months, but a lot of them are saying that a lot of the stuff that really gave meaning to your life is canceled for 18 months. So like they're floating that trial balloon.
Yeah.
And so again, it becomes a question of the 18 months is a non-trivial fraction of the one life you get. And is that a legitimate, especially when it's not like the alternative is, we unleash the old people on the world and they just have to cross their fingers. Those, that is obviously a false choice. But if the current strategy depends on stripping people of what it means to be human basically for 18 months, more or less, or making everybody into like a pioneer, living a pioneer style life from the old West, well, I have no interest in this. Right. Can we at least talk about alternatives without just shutting people down? No, there is no alternative. Taking 18 months away from you is the best we've come up with. Yeah, it maybe it's the best you've come up with.
Right. So just on a final note, last time we talked, it's hard to believe it was like just over 3 weeks ago, we didn't even mention this, right? I was on your show early March, we didn't even mention this. And we were talking about something that I put together and you participated in called the Ideas into Action Summit. And I wanted to get a message to your audience. There was a fairly good response considering a very uncertain and tumultuous month of March that followed our conversation. A pretty good response considering from your audience as far as people coming in to attend that. I wanted to let them know that it has been reformatted. And through this situation, we actually came out with a much better method of doing this as an interactive event. So the product exists. It's available at sspuniversity.com/ideas into action or tomwoods.com/ideas. And people can have the whole thing. They can take it presentation by presentation. And starting mid-April, we are going to be doing weekly discussion groups about each presentation. So we're just going to go in order. You will be one of the last ones. So if people are interested in, you know, discussing what Tom Woods says in this event, they've got a lot of lead time here to make a decision. But I actually think that as far as building a community, having engagement, instead of asking people to like, hey, spend three consecutive Saturdays, or like the first way we did it was like spend the whole weekend watching these presentations and discussing them and doing Q&As about them. That was like a big ask. And it was like a lot of content, like out of a fire hose. So now spacing it out like this and being able to build a community that I think will even last beyond this, which is something people are certainly looking for right now, is a much better way. So an update on our previous conversation, this is still available. People can use the coupon code Woods to save 30%. And we can have an ongoing discussion about something that I think is very valuable right now, which is how to acquire information, synthesize information, and present information most effectively, especially when the stakes are high. So that's what we put together. Tom is one of the participants, a whole bunch of other libertarian names that people in your audience would recognize, and even some interesting people they've never heard of that they might really actually appreciate hearing about the research methods of. So I just wanted to update your audience on that. This has changed, and I think we've actually emerged with a much better format for interacting with each other.
Well, I'm glad to hear about that because I think it is an important event and series of presentations.
Excellent. All right, Tom, thank you so much for coming back on the show and having this candid discussion with me, and look forward to talking again in the future.
Thanks a lot, Brett.
All right, folks, definitely check out that Ideas into Action Summit because it is so different from the kinds of things that libertarians release, which have to do with liberty or economics or history or whatever. This is taking a step back and instead asking about how do you become a good researcher in history, or how do you become a good conveyor of ideas, or how do you take command of a room? These sort of more fundamental questions are what are being covered in the Ideas into Action Summit. It's very much worth checking out. The link is tomwoods.com/ideas. And as Brett said, you get 30% off with code Woods. I mean, what other code would there be? So tomwoods.com/ideas, enter code Woods and take 30% off Brett's program. All right, Jeff Dice tomorrow. I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.